This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220 KC Huntsville. Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
That sweet beat of Clouds Beneath Your Knees by Ray Lynch chimes in Thursdays at 5 p.m. for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling. And it's found only on Houston's community station, KPFT. I'm Larry Thompson, tonight's host, and we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers whose stories take us on voyages through windows of their souls and on fanciful excursions amid worlds of enchantment before returning us safely to the present. Now, this ain't my first rodeo on this stellar station. Some of you may have heard me on the other side of the microphone right here on 90.1, So What's Your Story? But let's get to the reason we're here tonight. Telling stories. My guest tonight is a gifted teller I've known for more years than we'd both care to count. And she's perfect for a night like this. She's a Texas teller coming to us tonight from Bull Verde, Texas. Thank goodness storytelling found Sue Kuntz early in her career because she has a lot to say. Sue excites and connects to family and adult audiences by taking them on journeys through her multicultural folktales, fairy tales, urban legends, and personal stories from around the world, using words, music, puppetry, and even string figures. Well, anyway, she engages active participation among listeners and mesmerizes even the most reluctant kiddos. She grew up as an Air Force brat and traveled the world with her family. Sue's storytelling passion and energy continued from her 32 years of elementary teaching and librarian work in San Antonio. She has performed in multiple schools, libraries, festivals and conferences throughout Texas, such as the Grandkids Fest in Galveston, the George West Story Fest, the Texas Library Association events, and the Texas Storytelling Festival. And Sue is the 2016 recipient of the Tejas Storytelling Association's Colson Herndon Storytelling and Education Award. She is honored to be on the Texas Commission for the Arts touring roster. And you can check out her website at www.door2lore.com. More information there, and that's door, D-O-O-R, the number two, and then L-O-R-E, door2lore.com. Sue, how the heck are you? Have you had a good set of year-end holidays?
I have been wonderful, my good friend Larry, and thank you so much for having me on this show. It's been a long haul, hasn't it?
It definitely has been a long haul, and I couldn't believe you've never been on the airwaves here on KPFT before. And when Hank asked me to host, you were the very first name that popped up that said yes. No, you actually were the very first name that popped into my mind. And he was super happy to hear that you were going to be on here. You guys are on the board of directors for Tejas Storytelling Association together. He made sure we mentioned that. So it is definitely good. Now, you listed for me some stories you're going to tell tonight. What has inspired you to put that set of stories together tonight?
Well, you know, it's been almost 2 years pandemic where it just seemed like everything stopped for so long. And there was a bit of panic in probably most of us. And we had to work our ways through that. And as I try to figure out how to keep going and knowing how important stories were, there was that gray cloud over us for a while, I think over many of us. And I was getting stressed from hearing the gray cloud type stories and what was coming out on the news. And I needed some uplifting moments. I needed light to shine down. And those stories just found me, you know, those stories that brought laughter into my life again. And a lot of those stories were the ones I'd already had, but they were the stories that I learned how to reach out to others and tell them. And it makes everyone else feel like there's going to be light at the end of that tunnel. And I realized that's the way I'm going to go. So this collection I came up with for tonight really shows the 2 years we've gone through, and I'm going to continue to tell these stories because I love them. They touch your heart and mind, and make you want to, those of you who are listening out there, make you want to share the same stories with others. At least I hope so.
Well, there you go. That's a broad answer there. And this first story tonight has me a little bit concerned. It's called The Three Heads. And you said this is a tale about the difference between a fool, a wise man, and a storyteller. Let's hear this, The Three Heads.
You bet. Yes. And this is a story that came to me by way of storyteller Richard Martin over there in Germany. With all the Zooms that we've been having, he did a workshop for our San Antonio storytellers. And this was a story that, yes, found me and just lifted me up. And it's a great story for all of you out there who could be storytellers. And here we go. Once there was, and once there was not, a king who was as clever as he was wise, or so he thought. You see, one day he received a mysterious parcel with a label attached, which read, "If you are wise, you'll know the difference between these three ceramic heads contained within." Well, this was like Amazon coming to his castle. He immediately opened up that box, and within that box, there were those heads. He pulled one out at a time. And in fact, they looked identical. The noses were the same. The eyes were the same. The chins, the cheeks, the hair, the ears, they were exactly the same. He took that note back out and he read it one more time. "If you are wise, you'll know the difference between these three ceramic heads contained within." Well, the king was perplexed. "Yes, I am wise and I am clever. But no matter how I move each one of these heads, I see no difference. But I do have my counsel, and they are wise, for that is why they are my counsel. I will call them." And that's exactly what the king did. And the councilmen, as wise as they were, they came. And they were told exactly what they needed to do, find the difference between these ceramic heads. And so each one of them, oh, they picked and they prodded. They held up each head and they turned them upside down and shook them and listened and used a magnifying glass and looked within the ears and underneath the chin and where the hair was. There was no difference that they could find. And that eventually is what was reported back to the king. Well, the king thanked his ministry and said, there has to be someone here, someone that I have in front of me that I just need to ask advice from. And eventually, of course, he thought, my storyteller, my troubadour who tells the stories from when I was a child to now. And whenever I want her, she comes to share even new tales. Ah, she's the most wise of all. Now, his storyteller, well, she was quite old. And once he summoned her, it took her a while to get there in front of the throne, but she was there. He told her the problem of the three heads. She looked down at each one of them, lifted them up, and placed them right in front of her eyes. She took the very first head, and she looked at it left and right. She put a smile on her face, and she plucked a gray hair from her head. And she pushed that gray hair through one ear and pushed and pushed and pushed until that hair came out the other ear. And she said, ah, sire, this head is the head of a fool. For you see, what knowledge would go in would slip right back out, for there was nothing within that mind. A fool, indeed. The king was amazed. Ah, so this is the head of a fool. Well, thank you. And now, storyteller, what about the second head? Ah, she picked the second head up and she moved it to the left and moved it to the right. And she plucked another hair, another gray hair from her head. And she pushed that hair through one ear. And she pushed and she pushed and she pushed until it was all in. And then she smiled at the king. She said, ah, sire, this truly is the head of a wise man. For this man takes in all knowledge and stores it until needed. Ah, the king was amazed at her knowledge. Ah, thank you, storyteller. Thank you so much. Now there is one more head. Can you tell me what that head is? Well, the storyteller, oh, she went ahead and she picked it up and she looked it left and she looked it at the right. She plucked another long gray hair from her head. And she pushed it through one of those ears, and she pushed and she pushed and she pushed, and that hair, it came out the mouth. And the storyteller smiled and stood up even taller than what she was. She held that head up and she said, ah, sire, this is the head of a storyteller. For with all the knowledge and experience that goes in, would be coming out the mouth to be told in stories. But the king, his eyes were still looking. And he said, ah, but look, it's not the gray hair that you pushed in the ear that came out the mouth. Why, it's multiple colors. Ah, sire, any storyteller knows that taking the gray truth of a story, but mesmerizing with the magic of images and stories will make sure those that are listening will want to hear the story. And the king realized just then the true importance of a storyteller.
Fantastic. That's outstanding. And I'm fairly certain on 90.1 on Thursdays at 5, no one is ever going to forget the importance of a storyteller or the importance of using gray hairs to check those Amazon boxes that show up at your castle. That's an amazing story. But now I have to say, Sue, this next story, you sent me that list, and this list had a word in it that an old country boy like me can't hardly say, something with a P-O-Q, something pourquoi. That sounds French, or maybe that's Cajun. We need to get our friend Mark Babineau on here to do some translating for us. But you know, that reminded me a little bit of that old butter commercial, you know, where they had parquet. But tell me, this is not that kind of tale, I'm sure. You said this is a powerful story of dew in the morning.
Yes.
Now, around the honeydew ranch where I come from, that's important, that dew in the morning. So this one's called Rabbit and the Moon. So share Rabbit and the Moon with us.
I will. Thanks, Larry. Yeah, pourquoi, French for why. So, you know, when you think of why, let's see, why rabbit has such a short tail, or why snake has no legs, those are all pourquoi stories, and they go way back when it came to parents trying to teach their kids in the simplest way they could when they were so young, why things happen. And this is just a lovely story of Rabbit and the Moon. And the source is Bush People Tales. And I hope you all get a chance to find out more about that later. But here we go, Rabbit and the Moon. If you go out in the fields in the still, quiet hour before dawn, you'll find that the grass, even in your own backyard, is wet with the dew. Well, many, many years ago, on the great African plain, a little rabbit hopped right out onto the field in the still, quiet hour before dawn. And he too saw that the grass was wet. And he wondered where that water had come from. He listened with those long ears for anything that would give him a clue. And sure enough, in the distance, he heard crying. True crying, but not from around him. He had to look up and up and up. And who do you think he saw? The moon. It was the moon who was crying. And that moon up in the sky would look down at the rabbit, for the rabbit said, Moon, why are you crying? And moon just shook his head and looked so sad and looked down at Rabbit and said, I am crying because I am not like man. Moon, why in the world would you want to be like man? You're the moon. We dance under the light of the moon, not the light of the man. You should not be crying for that. Oh, Rabbit, I want to be like man because man never dies. Moon, man never dies? Of course man dies. Of course he does. Moon, take my hand. Come down here to Earth, and I will show you that, in fact, man does die. And so, Moon, he came down the stairs to Earth, and Rabbit helped him with his hand. And then Rabbit took Moon to a hut that was close by. And Rabbit said, Moon, look inside that window. Take a glimpse inside that window and see what I see. Oh, he did see an old man lying there on his bed, taking his last breath, for it was rattling low in that old man's throat. You see, Moon, man dies. He will not be with us shortly. Oh, no, Rabbit, said Moon. No. That is not what I'm talking about. And Moon turned his light into another direction and pointed to another hut. And so they both walked over to this other hut. And it was Moon who said to Rabbit, look into this window and see that there is a young man lying on a bed next to a young woman, and see who is in between them but a baby that was born to both of them. You see, they are two. They have each other, and because they have each other, there will always be new birth. Rabbit, I am alone up in the sky. I am the only moon up there. There is only one, only me. And once I am gone, there will be no more moon. Rabbit was speechless. So the moon, he stepped up slowly back up those stairs and sat high in the sky, still crying, still seeing those tears trickling down now over the grass. And if you walk out in the early morning before dawn, you too will see Moon's tears, but now you'll understand.
Fantastic. And that's poor Koala. That's how come? How come that's, there's dew?
Now we know.
That's a,
now
just we know. One of the amazing things that stories can do. This is Larry Thompson. I'm your host tonight. And that other voice you hear is Sue Koontz. And we're both talking to you here on KPFT 90.1 FM. So what's your story? Houston's community station, 89.5 in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville. And don't forget, KPFT's free internet on HDT to meet your news, arts, and entertainment needs. We're so proud here to be on KPFT, Houston's community station. This show, So What's Your Story, is Houston's community show. Our guests are ordinary folks with extraordinary stories to tell, stories about loss, jubilation, and every trajectory in between. Students use us as their creative platform, artists, newsmakers, and your neighbors, all finding a home for their stories right here. We're all born a blank page, and each day is a story, and this is the place to tell us. If you have stories to tell or ideas for guests, let us know on our So What's Your Story Facebook page. But back to Sue. Somewhere you mentioned that you devour brain research on storytelling, and I think you even have workshops like We're Hotwired to Tell Stories. In 2 minutes or less, Tell me, what the heck is this brain research and hot wiring? That almost sounds illegal to an old boy like me.
Well, you know, brain research is so ongoing. It's almost like discovering what's underneath the ocean. There's still so much for us to know, but we were talking even 15 years ago about left brain and right brain. And now we're realizing that there really isn't a left brain and a right brain, even though we do have different hemispheres, that they all just seem to work together. And then we found out so much when it comes to brain research with folks who have been operating, they've had brain surgery, and the most unbelievable miracles happen. Even though 80% of your brain's taken away, your brain somehow finds a way to make things work. And when it comes to storytelling, that's the piece I'll get into with folks. When it comes to storytelling, we are hotwired. We're 150,000 years of hotwiring of stories. And it's just like in our DNA. So it doesn't matter how our day went. We have a story to tell, no matter whether we want to tell it or not. Somehow we know if there's a cause and effect, we're going to be able to problem solve any type of a story, whether it's a minute long incident that we had or a full day. Our brains work with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And the coolest thing that I'd love to share with everyone when it comes to brain research and trying to share stories, whether you're a teacher, you're a business person in any field of business, or you're a parent or grandparent, if you can grab your audience with a story that involves emotion, that is the key to storytelling. In fact, we have found out through brain research that connections are everything. So if we can make connections through truisms, things that happen to so many of us, and the use of emotions, whether it's having to do with hatred or love or joy, confusion, those are the pieces that will clench our mind and our heart and sink that story into long-term memory versus short-term memory. And that's what we love about stories, because we want stories to be carried on from generation to generation. And this is how it was always done before writing.
So those connections help to sink that story in deeper and deeper into your mind.
Yes, those dendrites just grow and grow because those connections actually light up the same brain areas from the teller to the listener. And that's the research that's so cool. So when you're eliciting those emotions, the same areas of the brain will light up between the listeners and the teller. Isn't that amazing?
Now, folks, if you didn't know already, only one of us is a school teacher. I heard the word dendrite in there, and we've already discussed pourquoi. So somebody's getting some good education from Miss Sue Coons when she's not telling stories. That also, I mentioned in the intro that you were Air Force brat and world traveler. So did you, when you were growing up and hearing and seeing things in those foreign places, did some of those sink in and become stories for you as you moved forward in life? And can you tell us one?
Oh, all of the above. Absolutely. Dad was in the Air Force for 21 years. And yes, we got to travel from, I was born in Germany, and we traveled to Abilene, Texas, but then on over to Yalova, Turkey, and then over to close to Tokyo, Japan, and then over to Hawaii, and in between places like Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And you know what? You know, I was always on American compound bases, but there was always off base. And so, yes, we got to hear the mixture of folk tales from those areas, and but also our own stories, which turned out to be pretty hilarious no matter where we were, because there are four of us kids, and that spelled out trouble. And with that, I'd love to tell you a story that came from Japan. It was, I believe, 1967. I was 8 years old. So I want you to think, all you listeners out there, you know, what you were doing when you were eight, when it came to your friends and when it came to possible when going to church on Sundays kind of a thing. Some of us didn't, some of us did. My mom tried to get us to a Methodist church if they were available. But if we couldn't find a Methodist church, depending on what base we lived on, we'd get to a Protestant church or some sort. But I do all to know that as an eight-year-old, I knew a little bit about religions. I loved being Methodist at that time. We had potluck dinners. And those potluck dinners on Sunday nights, you know, I thought that was part of our religion, which I thought was pretty cool. And we would have grape juice, you know, communion. That was pretty amazing. And you know, bread. And I knew a little bit about the symbolism of both. But it was the food I was most encouraged by. And we'd get little crosses at Easter time if we learned some Bible verses. You know, that was being a Methodist. That was me being an eight-year-old. I knew a little bit about the Jewish religion because two of my friends were Jewish, and they were able to teach us Hebrew words, and we placed them up in the, you know, the girls' bathroom and the boys' bathroom at school and things like that. So, you know, it was kind of fun to know a little bit about the Jewish religion through the Hebrew words. And the Baptists, you know, I knew all about John the Baptist. So I figured all Baptists baptized grown-up people in bathtubs and the ocean and the lake. And I thought that was pretty amazing because we as Methodists pretty much got baptized as babies only, which I thought was kind of sad because I couldn't remember being baptized. So I did know a little bit. Now, being Catholic, that's where my story begins. For where we lived in Japan, in Kanemura, the buildings that we lived in, there were four families in each rectangular building on the base. And of course, you get to be really good friends with whoever is around you. And Kathy lived at the very end of this particular building we all lived in. And Kathy and Suzanne and I were great friends. And we were over at Kathy's house, which is just, you know, two steps down pretty much. And Kathy was showing Suzanne and I this beautiful necklace. At least that's what it looked like to me. And it was just gorgeous with these white and clear beads on it. And then a little cross. And I thought, oh, I love that, Kathy. Where did you get it? I need to tell my mom to buy that for me. And Kathy said, well, Susie, you can only get it if you're Catholic. And I said, well, how can I get it if I'm Catholic? Well, you have to go tell your mom that you want to be Catholic. And then once you're Catholic, you'll get this. Well, that's all I needed to hear. So I ran on down the steps and back over to my house again, just right, you know, right down the sidewalk. And of course, it's dinner time and I rush in and I'm so excited to share the good news with my mom and everyone else sitting around the table that we were now going to be Catholic. Won't that be cool, Mom? We'll all get these necklaces with a cross on them. It's going to be just cool. I get to share it with my friends and I'll wear it every day. And Mom, of course, puts a smile on her face and tries to explain to me just wishy-washy stuff about, no, we're Methodists or Protestant and we'll stay that way. It didn't make me happy at all. After dinner, I pounced upstairs. Now, Dad wasn't home at this point because he was part of the Korean War, but he got home soon enough to find out that I still wanted to be Catholic and I wasn't going to let go that easily. Well, after that, I'd say about 3 months, closer to Christmas time, My grandparents, Grandma and Grandpa Hennings, Lloyd Hennings and Irene Hennings, both of them teachers, they flew to Japan to see all of us. And of course, they toured all around Kyoto and Tokyo and got to see everything they wanted to see and spend a lot of time with us. And finally, the day came where Grandpa, who was a not only a principal of his high school, Elyria High School in Ohio, but he was also a social studies teacher. He wanted to see our school, Chofu Elementary. Now, my mom was a teacher there. She taught third grade. And I happened to be in third grade that particular year. And so we all piled into the van. Grandpa sat in the front next to my mom, who was driving. And the rest of us four kids were in the back arguing, I'm sure, as usual. And everyone's kind of talking loudly. And there was a moment in the car where mom and grandpa were having this conversation. And grandpa had proceeded to tell mom that he had just become a furbigated Catholic. Now, let me say that again to all you listeners out there. He had just become a furbigated Catholic. You heard that right. And boy, I heard it too. My grandpa was not only a Catholic, he was a furbigated Catholic. Woo-hoo! You know what that meant? My brain just went off. Why? That would mean more than just pearls and clear jewels on that necklace. Why? I'm picturing rubies and sapphires and emeralds on that necklace. Because why? Because my grandpa was a furbigated Catholic. And what my grandpa is what we all are in that family. Well, I couldn't hold it in. I was just popcorn pan excited. Soon as that van stopped at Chofu Elementary and the doors open up, all the kids piled out and I just ran out and said goodbye to everybody. And there were probably about 2,000 of us waiting to get into the school on that black tarmac in front. And I suspect all 2,000 of those kids knew that Susie Berg was a furbigated Catholic before that bell ever rang. And I'm telling you what, I thought the world was right there for me when after we all stood and said the pledge and sang the Star Spangled Banner and announcements came on, the principal then announced to my classroom that Susie Berg needs to find her way to her mother's classroom as soon as possible. Well, all the kids looked my way. And of course, I stood taller than I ever stood before, knowing that there was going to be some big award, something given to me. And I walked out of that room and then ran up the rail, for this was a three-story building, and up and up and up to my mom's science classroom. And there she was. She was standing right outside the classroom with my grandpa right behind her. And I ran up to her and I said, Mom, I know, isn't this cool? Grandpa, he's exactly what I knew he would be. I'm so excited. And Mom looked down at me with the sternest face I've ever seen, eye to eye, nose to nose. And she said, what is the talk around town that you're a what? Mom, we're, all of us, are furbigated Catholics. You heard it in the van. Oh, we're going to all wear those necklaces. It's just going to be amazing. I'll pick mine out first, but then you guys can pick out anything you want. Well, Mom was totally puzzled. She was perplexed. But it was Grandpa who looked on down at mom and then looked at me with a smile on his face. And I said, Grandpa, he's smiling. He knows. And it was Grandpa who said, Anne, why don't you let me talk to your daughter for just a moment? So mom, she scooted away and she checked out on the kids. And Grandpa got down on both knees. He was 6'5". And he looked at me and he said, Susie, what exactly did you hear in the van? I said, oh, Grandpa, I heard you tell all of us that you had just become a furbigated Catholic, which I'm so proud of you. But Grandpa, it looked like he was holding something in. He took a deep breath. And he said, Susie, I was telling your mom that I was brought into an organization and honored with becoming a Phi Beta Kappa, which is amazing. It's an honor society, a fraternity for educators. Of course, I didn't even know what that meant, a Phi Beta Kappa. And the only thought I had was, does that involve that gorgeous necklace I wanted? And in fact, it did not. That beautiful necklace I wanted, I found out later, is called a rosary, a Catholic rosary. And as for a Phi Beta Kappa and a furbigated Catholic, I'll never forget that at one point, I was able to have my own rosary, if only in my mind. And that's the story of the furbigated Catholic.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that right there, that is Sue Kuntz coming to us tonight from Bull Verde. And you're hearing her here. This is, we're on the air in H-Town, and I'm sure there are probably some Phi Beta Kappas, and there are probably some furbigated Catholics in H-Town as well. That is wrong. That is just wrong. But, you know, here we are on So What's Your Story, and that's your story. And this show started out in Houston as a storytelling place. The first storytelling platform in Houston, and it's grown. We got a sponsor, the Houston Storytelling Guild. Sue, I know you know some of those folks over there. That's yes. A great place to learn about the art of telling. San Antonio has a fantastic storytelling guild. Houston meets virtually on the fourth Tuesday of every month, 7 to 8:30 p.m. And they've got a website too, www.houstonstorytellers.org, and that'll have the Zoom link on it to tune in. Now, you can join that organization, but we can't talk about price on a Pacifica station, but you can probably find the amount you need for your membership in your sofa cushions. And you can also enjoy on that website past programs of So What's Your Story. Every show since 2008, I've been on a few of those shows. And now Sue's going to be on one of those shows stored out there on that website. Also, yay, sponsors are our friends at The Moth at Warehouse Live. They're back in full swing the second Tuesday of the month. And they have astonishing stories there, and you get to know Houston storytelling community. And of course, you can crank up your skills by joining the Tejas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. Sue, we need to let you remind us that storytelling is all over the state, even beyond the confines of the Grand Parkway. When does the San Antonio Storytelling Group meet, and is that virtual?
Yes, we are virtual. The San Antonio Storytellers meet the first Wednesday of every month, and it is on Zoom. We meet from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Central Time, but we invite everyone because it is free, And we would love for anyone to try to share a story, something
fantastic.
You're working on.
Yeah. That's, and having it virtual makes it easy to bring people from all over the place in to tell their stories. If there is a teeny tiny downside to all this lockdown stuff, virtual storytelling has got to be there in that space. Now, unfortunately, we're wrapping down here, and your last story tonight is called Trouble Boxes and Blessing Bundles.
You got that right.
Tell us that story.
I will. Thank you guys so much. So Trouble Boxes and Blessing Bundles, it's a folk tale, and I hope you guys enjoy it. There was once a woodsman. Oh, and he loved to tell everyone about his troubles. Oh, he had troubles. He had more troubles than anyone. Oh, his baby was always crying. His dog was always barking. And his mother-in-law was always sitting in his rocking chair, rocking back and forth and back and forth. Now, he told everyone about his troubles. He would even walk across the street in town when he saw somebody just so he could remind them about all these terrible troubles he had, making sure he had more troubles than anyone else. And finally, people just started dodging him. Whenever they saw the woodsman in town, they walked the other direction, as you would too, I'm sure. Well, the woodsman, he was in the woods finally with his axe, and he had his wood bundles, one on his left shoulder and one on his right. And he was walking through the woods, just trying to find one more dead tree to chop down into little pieces before he went home. And there was a woman in the woods, someone he had not seen before. She looked a bit like a hiker and was probably observing nature, looking at some of the leaves and turning them over and picking berries. And he thought, someone to tell my troubles to. So he walked right on up to her and he said, "Hello, I am the woodsman." And she looked up at him. And she said, "Yes, I know. You're the woodsman with all the troubles of the world." Well, the woodsman, he couldn't believe that she had known that. He had never seen her before. And he said, How do you know that?" And she said, "I am the keeper of the trouble boxes. Would you like to see your trouble box? It's just right inside this cave behind the waterfall." The woodsman was quite curious. Yes, I would. Well, the hiker, she got up and she led the way, and the woodsman picked up his bundles of wood and carried them and followed her behind this waterfall into this dark, dark cave. And she said, "This way, into this room, please. Please." And he followed her. And this room was filled with smoke, smog, and you could feel the heaviness of depression and sadness and even crying. And he was a little worried what to do, but she said, "Here are all of the trouble boxes, and yours, woodsman, yours is right here. In fact, it is the largest one. Go look inside." And so the woodsman, he had to stand on some stairs to get up and lift the top off. And sure enough, he saw a baby cry. He heard his dog barking, and yes, there was his mother-in-law rocking back and forth in his rocking chair. He put the lid back on. He said, "Yep, Yep. I bet you I wouldn't be able to carry this box out. It is full. It is heavier than any of these other boxes. Well, the hiker said, would you like to choose another box? Another one? Yes. Yes. I'll choose a much smaller box. She pointed and showed him all of his options. And so he immediately went to one of the smallest boxes and he lifted it up. And if you could only see his face, it changed from being excited to just white as a ghost, almost wanting to cry, for inside there was a very sickly child. Maybe a child that wasn't even going to make it. He said, oh no, I don't want this box. And he put the lid immediately back on it. He went to another box and he lifted that lid up, thinking this has got to be much better. And it wasn't as large as his first box, but when he looked in, he saw a house. It was dark, but he saw thieves running away and there was nothing he could do. It was a terrible scene. And he put the lid back on the box. He went to the third box and he lifted it up, and all he felt was loneliness and sorrow, for it was as if empty. He put the lid on that box. And he looked at the hiker and he said, ma'am, I think I'll just go and do my own box. I think my box of trouble would be just fine. Well, the hiker looked at him and said, all right, you have chosen yours. But before you go, I want to show you one other room. A room of blessings, bundles of blessings. Come, it will make you feel good. And he needed to feel good. And so he followed the hiker, the woman, into another room. Now this room, it smelled of fragrances of every wonderful rose you can imagine. There was light pouring in through the crevices of this cave, and the light that hit each one of these bundles of blessings, you could see beautiful ribbon of gold and silver and rainbows of color from each one. And it was this hiker who said, now your bundle of blessings, It's here. If you would like to open it. And he looked at her and he said, yes, I would. So he walked up to his bundle of blessings and he took off the lid after unwrapping the ribbon that was on it. And he looked inside and, oh my goodness, the very first thing you saw was a little baby whose arms were outstretched, wanting to give him a big hug, and it put such a big smile on his face. And then there was a house that had been robbed by thieves, but dog barking them away, for they were running away. Oh, that dog, that hero of a dog. And there was his mother-in-law, rocking in his rocking chair, but she was knitting something. She was sewing something up, and it was with patches of clothing also that were part of his family's. Oh, she was actually sewing a quilt, a beautiful quilt of made from love. And finally, he said, yes, this is what I would like. He quickly turned around, put the lid on, and he made a fire just for this hiker. And he knew before saying goodbye what she was trying to tell him. When you count your blessings, your troubles will disappear. And I hope that's a story you will carry with you, listeners, for a long, long time.
Fantastic. Thank you, Sue, very much. Sue is a teacher, a librarian, a storyteller, a musician. We didn't even mention the fact that she taught herself how to play ukulele. She's in a band with some kind of woodwind instrument, I think, too. Your plate is so full that it needs sideboards. That's how we say it around here. But I'm so pleased that you took a few minutes out to be here with us tonight. We have just a second for any parting words you might want to share, and then I've got to crank up the music and we'll be on our way out. If you just tell folks how much you enjoyed being here, if you did, and should we invite you back?
Well, please invite me back anytime. And yes, thank you so much, Larry, for allowing me to be here. And I thank the radio stations for allowing the community to hear stories like this. And just know that there are so many of us out there to share stories and want others to learn stories. Please feel free to tell personal tales, folk tales, tall tales. The world is a limit, and there are so many ways you can do that. Please go to the Tejas Storytelling.com, and you can find a guild that's close to you. And we offer so many different workshops, and we are a welcoming group. We'd love for you to come as a listener and hopefully eventually as a storyteller. As we know, stories are so very important to all of us. I just am amazed that the stories that are coming out are just touch us in every which way, right into our hearts. So thank you again, Larry. And thank you, listeners.
Well, certainly. And we're going to wrap up the program tonight and keep it here because there's more great programming up next. Stay tuned for Charles Hightower with R&B Gold and his cool mix of soul on Houston's community station, KPFT. You got to make 90.1 a part of every day you have, whether you're home or you're driving home or you're just chilling. Be sure to join us every Thursday at 5 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And, you know, remember, even if a story doesn't end the way you like, it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace to everyone. Be good to each other. Have a great rest of the evening.
Coming soon to KPFT, Climate Connections with Dr. Anthony Leiserwitz. Every weekday, Dr. Leiserwitz of the Yale School of the Environment and a national team of journalists and environmental researchers will uncover the ways that climate change is already impacting our lives and our society. Featuring the diverse voices of the people and organizations taking action to reduce carbon pollution and increase our planet's resilience to climate impacts, Climate Connections shares stories of both the reality of climate change and the hope humanity has of stopping it. In each 90-second episode, you'll learn about the connections between the climate and a wide range of issues like public health, extreme weather, the economy, national security, the arts, religion, and more. Catch new episodes of Climate Connections Mondays through Fridays here on 90.1 FM KPFT, Houston's community station.
Hello, stranger. Since we're strolling down the same frequency spectrum, why don't you join me? I'm on my way to the services of the Church of the Infinite. We celebrate the infinity of musical sounds and the musical sounds of infinity. You'll hear Brahms and the Band, Bill Monroe and Marilyn Monroe, Gaga, Gershwin, and the Grateful Dead. You'll hear something during each service that you've never heard before. Guest ministers include Douglas Adams and Mark Twain. Join us. We meet at 11 every Wednesday evening.
You're the